Hello and welcome to another episode of Voyeurism. Today, I want to talk about all of my thoughts on thoughts. I have been thinking a lot about thinking, and I posted an Instagram story the other day. Let me find it. What did I say? What would happen if you separated someone from language for 10 plus years? Like you put someone on an alien planet with no signage or books or people. Would you forget language after 10 years and start to marinate in pure abstract thought, the way prehistoric humans probably did and animals do? Or would you just think to yourself in your language the entire time? Is language at all self-serving, or is it fully in service of expressing your inner world to others, making it redundant for you to be separated from language users for all eternity? I posted that question on my story because it was on my mind. I read a chapter of a book where someone was stranded in a cave alone for years and they were struggling to talk and to think when they encountered another human again. And I was like, what would that actually be like, especially if you extended it, like not 4 years, but like 10 years, 20 years, how would your thoughts change shape? And it sort of sparked a conversation about what thought is, because a lot of people responded to my story and they were like, oh, I don't think I would stop thinking in English. Like, I just think in, you know, words. But then it's like, okay, but what makes a thought a thought? Is the thought the words, or is a thought the idea that comes before the words? Because the way I see it is words are a translation of abstract concepts, of abstract ideas. And at what point in the passage of an idea do we name it thought? Because growing up, I've always thought of thought as being the words floating around in my mind, because I'm very much someone with an internal monologue. Like, I'm narrating my day and I'm narrating my experiences. But then when I started to explore spirituality, you sort of inevitably come across this idea of, okay, well, if one can observe one's thought, what is the thought and what is one? And then you sort of go down the hole of like, okay, well, there must be a consciousness from whence the thought came. And then there's a separation of mind and spirit, mind and soul, mind and consciousness, whatever you believe it. I like to call it a soul. So to me, I don't feel like my thought is the sentence that I say. I don't feel like my thought is that structured string of words that comes before the sentence. For me, the thought starts much earlier on. And to answer the question, the hypothetical that I posed on my Instagram story is quite complicated, because you need to separate what a thought is and what role language plays in thought. And for me, basically what I think that language is almost a habit, right? Like, you grow up and you're encouraged to shape your ideas into sounds and into language even before you can actually speak. Like, the sounds you make, you are encouraging the shape of your abstract ideas to fit in to language. And I think that it is a very, very deeply ingrained habit. But I guess the question I'm asking is, if you separated someone from the necessity to shape their ideas into the confines of a language, how far away would they stray from language? And what I think would happen is, if you were stranded on an alien planet with no phone, no signage, no words, no books, no people, let's say you're there for 20 years, I don't think that language would fully escape your mind. Like, I don't think that you would totally forget English or whatever it is that is your native language, but I don't think you would use it anywhere near as often, because what would be the point of shaping the abstract into language if you are not externally expressing your ideas? And while I do think that language really structures thoughts and it really does allow for deeper levels of intellectual contemplation because of the structure that it provides, it's also very limiting, right? Like, a word to me is simply never going to mean the same thing to someone else. Like, especially words that are trying to encapsulate something abstract, like love. If I say I love you, no one is really ever going to know what I mean, except for me. It's simply a feeble attempt of trying to shape an abstract idea into a sound that can be externally received. But I basically think that were this individual to be removed from language and live in a languageless world, that on occasion when they felt the need for the structure of intellectualization, they would refer back to the habit of language. But when it comes to daily deep thought, meditation, reflection, I really don't think you would continue to bother shaping your ideas into words. And I think, and I don't mean this in a condescending way at all, that a lot of people don't know a separation between language and thought, because like I said, the habit of translating abstract ideas into language is a habit you start to begin when you are like one year old. Like literally you start hearing sounds and you start observing them and copying them like when you're an infant. So it makes a lot of sense that a lot of people associate thought and thinking with the words that they are aligning together into language in their mind. But I guess I don't perceive thought to be that. And as I have thought a lot about thought, I have noticed the layers of thinking that sort of come behind the words. And I find myself thinking without words a lot more often. And I, like I said, I am someone who has an internal monologue. I'm a very word-oriented person, and I really do enjoy collecting my thoughts into words. I love playing with words. I love writing. But I feel like there is this presence behind the words that I'm really aware of and have been aware of ever since I started to unpack the idea of a thought. And I guess what I'm saying is I think that, you know, were I to be stranded on an alien planet without thought, I just spend so much more time in that space and so much less time in the, I don't want to say conscious thought, but so much less time in the structured use of language thought, if that makes any sense at all. And something that I think about so often is what was it like to be a human before language was a part of our existence? Do you know what I mean? Like, I think we associate that with being primitive. Wait, let me Google what primitive means. Okay, I think primitive actually refers to industry and technology, but it does say here a person belonging to a pre-literate non-industrial society. So what was I even saying? Yeah, the idea of a primitive human that isn't utilizing organized language, how would they feel? Like, how would they, I can't even put into words the thoughts that come to me when I think about this. Like, because organizing my thoughts into language has been so hardwired into me and is such a habit, when I start to feel some type of way, I rush to label it. Like, you know, I'll be dating someone and I'm like, oh, like, am I in love? Like, no primitive human would look another human in the eyes. I really feel like I'm misusing this word primitive. Like, it feels kind of like racist and problematic, but no, like, pre-literate human, like pre-language human, is looking another being in the eyes, feeling a soul-to-soul connection, and doing anything other than feeling that feeling. Oh my gosh, maybe this is why we intellectualize our feelings so much, because we're so addicted to the organization of thought and language. Oh my god, I'm overwhelmed. But just imagine not having a label for feelings. Imagine not rushing to label the abstract that comes behind your thought, like looking someone in the eyes, feeling feelings of love. Maybe you'd notice way more like where you feel it in your body. Like maybe rather than, you know, maybe this preliterate human, instead of going, oh, maybe I love this person, am I in love with this person? Or do I just love this person? Or is it my attachment issues? Maybe it's just my anxious attachment style. Maybe it's limerence. Limerence is what I'm experiencing. The preliterate human is not doing any of that. The preliterate human is going, feeling a tingling at the back of my mind. I'm feeling this energy bubbling in my chest. I mean, they're not even thinking that, because they wouldn't even have those labels, but you know what I mean? Just like pure presence of existence. And that is something that you can obviously achieve despite speaking a language, right? Like that's the whole point of the meditative state. It's separating yourself from the thinking mind. But imagine the thinking mind not being your default state and pure existence being a default state, running on instinct, you know? Like, obviously, we don't really know what's going on in the brain of an animal, but we can kind of assume that they probably don't have the same level of organized thought that we do, and they don't have language structures the way that we do. And it's like, is that what is happening in the mind of... I always think about what instinct must feel like when you don't have language and you don't have a way to describe it. Like a deer that notices, you know, a sound in the bushes and it goes, I must run away because that's a lion. Like that deer is not intellectualizing that. They're not sitting there like, that could be a lion. I must gather my children and run into the hills. They just do it. And I'm like, what are they experiencing mentally? Are they just getting a rush of adrenaline? Are they driven by hormones? Do they see images? Or are they just experiencing like that abstract that happens before thought? Like this abstract space between the conception of an idea and then the translation into a thought. Like, is that just where all beings other than humans exist? I would also love to talk to someone who grew up being truly bilingual about their experience of organizing ideas into thoughts. Like if they have one language that they favor or if it depends on the situation. I know heaps of people, but I'm currently just sitting alone in my house, so that won't be happening right now. But I used to be pretty much fluent in German a few years ago when I was like living there. And I would often think in German and I'm just like, man, like what a strange experience. Like having two lanes that you can direct your ideas down, because that's basically what being bilingual or multilingual is, especially if you reach like native level fluency, which I probably can't say that I ever have. And just like having an idea bubbling in your consciousness, and then depending on the context of who you're translating that idea to, you get to pick which lane of language you send it down. Like what if you're like just alone in your house and you're like fully bilingual, trilingual? Do you constantly switch into different languages depending on like which language suits the idea better? Because some languages are more logical and analytical. Some languages are more expressive and romantic. I've always been so obsessed with language. And I mean, I say this speaking like, I don't know, 1.7 languages. I really want to learn more languages, but I'm like, isn't that crazy that the habit of language learning that you have been given, right? Like, let's say you grow up speaking Vietnamese, like the habit that you have is to shape your like creative ideas into the Vietnamese language. Yet my habit growing up in an English speaking country is to shape my ideas into the English language. And it's like, does that change our ideas themselves? Like, oh my gosh, language is so limiting in a sense, but also so profound. One time when I was high with one of my friends, I was trying to articulate an idea that I had, and I found myself so frustrated at my inability to just put them inside my mind and give them the idea. And I remember having this thought, like, imagine if we just spoke in the transfer of energy and molecules. Like, imagine if I open my mouth and molecules come out of my mouth, and those molecules are just from the depths of my consciousness, abstract ideas. And then someone else gobbles up the molecules, and then they just innately understand what my abstract consciousness was trying to express. Like, can you imagine if that's how we communicated and we didn't have to filter our feelings through whatever language we have ended up being able to speak, or languages? Like, I think about this all the time. Anyway, I don't think it would be very ethical to actually remove someone from society for 20 years and carry out this thought experiment, but I want to talk a little bit more about what I think a thought is. I think a thought is sort of a singularity that arises from the togetherness that is your consciousness, right? Like if your consciousness is a sea of potentiality and a sea of ideas, a thought is a singularity that arises from this, that you, the conscious self, the soul, are able to observe. And I think that that's the absolute first step of a thought, is like the separation of that idea from, you know, the everything that is your consciousness. It's kind of like fishing. Like, imagine the ocean is your consciousness, your sea of potentiality, and then the thinking mind is the fisherman, the fisher person, and you just put your, oh my gosh, what's it called? Fishing rod into the ocean. And then that singularity, the fish, is an idea, and your choices are to reel it in and examine it and continue along the process of developing that thought into a meal, I guess. This analogy is kind of losing the plot, but you get what I'm saying. Or you can throw it back into the ocean, back into the abyss. And I think that thought as we know it in terms of, you know, a string of words, language, those are the fish that for whatever reason we do choose to hold on to rather than just throw back into the abyss. And to try to tie this analogy to the thought experiment I was talking about before, like putting the person on the alien planet, imagine eating the fish is communicating and speaking. If you remove that, it's like the fisherman is sitting on the boat fishing for thoughts, and they'll reel the fish in and look at it, but because they don't need to eat anymore, i.e. they don't need to speak, they don't need to communicate, they don't really need to clean that fish off and like polish it into language, and that fish can just sort of be observed and be experienced and then thrown back into the sea. That's sort of what I'm getting at. I don't know if this is going to make sense to literally anyone. The image that I'm seeing right now is actually so bonkers. Like, I fully wish I could just like give you the molecules of my abstract thoughts and you could gobble them up and see what I'm seeing, because it's really crazy. And I think I first felt this separation of the ocean and the fish of my consciousness and the singularity of an idea or a thought through meditation. Like, I had read about it when I was experimenting, I guess, with spiritual ideas and philosophy, like reading about Buddhism and New Age spirituality, like the separation of mind, body, and soul. Like, I understood what it was in theory, which is very easy to do, right? But I think meditating and experiencing that feeling of something is happening, but also nothing is happening. Like, there are no fish, right? Like, I can't feel or see any fish. There are no thoughts. There are no words. But there is also so much going on. And it was such an overwhelming feeling, because I feel like I've never separated my mind from the singularities, from the ideas, from the fish, especially as someone who has a very constant stream of thought. Like, I think very quickly, I speak very quickly, I can so quickly get a singularity, an idea into, you know, a cooked meal. Like, it doesn't take me long. So it's a very active process for me to observe the journey of a thought and for me to sit with the space that comes before the thought, i.e. the ocean, the abyss, the potentiality, your soul, whatever you want to call it. Like, that isn't something that I sort of naturally experienced. I sort of had to experiment with meditation, with a meditative state. But that's when I was like, oh, okay, like, I'm thinking so much, but I'm also not thinking at all. What the actual heck is going on? And ever since this realization of like, oh my God, like, I'm not the fish, I'm the fisherman. Like, I am the one holding the fishing rod. And if I want to just stare at that ocean all day and not look at a singular fish, I can do that. Oh my God. Oh my God, it changed my life. I really hope someone can relate to what I am talking about right now, because I feel crazy. And I can't speak for anyone other than myself, but I think were I to be separated from the need to translate the abstract into language, from the need to take fish out of the abyss and serve it up on a plate for others to eat, I think if I was separated from that, me as a fisherman would just spend way more time staring at the ocean. And if I did all of a sudden have to like wash and cook a fish for someone, I think I would really struggle. I'm gonna put this fisherman analogy down, because I feel like I have absolutely abused it. Anyway, I guess what I'm saying is that I think language and thought are not one, but they obviously have a lot in common, and that language is only really there because it is so necessary to translate your inner world into your outer world, when living in community, especially the type of community that we have created, right? Like this primitive, pre-literate human that didn't need to have a job, probably didn't need to do anything other than stare at the ocean all day. So it was kind of up to them if they wanted to try and serve up. Oh my God, not the fish analogy coming back. I can't escape it. Anyway, I read this book earlier this year called The Surrender Experiment, which is basically about manifestation and moving with the flow of life, taking the path of least resistance and not letting your thoughts and the fish get in the way of, oh my God, I'm so done with myself. I brought it up again. What I was going to say was, yeah, not letting the fish get in the way of the ocean and just letting the ocean flow. And it's this man's story of his sort of experiment on himself of just being, you know, at the mercy of the sea and just letting anything happen. But when he talks about his journey, he talks about his realization that he is the fisherman and not the fish. Like he was just sitting in a living room and he was noticing his thoughts and he was like, wait, if I can notice my thoughts, then what the actual heck am I? Which is just, it's so funny. Like I've read so many spiritual books where someone has had a similar revelation. And I'm just like, humans are so funny that we can just randomly on a Tuesday afternoon when we're in our 30s be like, wait a second, my whole life I've thought I am a fish, but I'm in fact not. Because we are in a society where we are so obsessed with the intellectualization of ideas. But I feel quite similarly. Like I think I just sort of recognized that I can tune in and out of my thoughts. Like I will have days where I am so invested in my thoughts, in my fish, and so distant from the ocean. But I feel like, you know, if I'm the fisherman, I truly can't escape this analogy. I'm obsessed with it, it seems. I'm the fisherman and I can just tune my focus into the ocean and into the fish. And it's sort of like a choice. And because, you know, we live in a society, I often do get very distracted by the fish and I forget about the ocean. And that's the whole point of practices like yoga and meditation and, you know, breath work. That's the whole point of them, is to sort of reconnect you with the consciousness that sits behind the fish. Can't take myself seriously. But back to this idea of what is thinking and what is a thought. I often just think of my thinking mind as other. Like I'll be like, wow, she's really stressed today. Like I'll listen and I'll hear a lot of stress thoughts and I'm like, oh my God, she's so dramatic today. And obviously that is a thought, but that is a thought that stems from, you know, me, the fisherman, observing the fish. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know, my relationship with my thoughts is so different now to before I had this realization, I guess, that I am not my thoughts. I don't even like saying I'm not my thoughts, because you obviously are your thoughts. Like your thoughts come from you. I guess what I'm trying to say is you are so much more than your thoughts, right? And that has to be true. Like if it wasn't true, we wouldn't struggle with this, like not feeling our feelings and stress in the body, intellectualizing our emotions. Like that wouldn't be a thing if we were only our thoughts, right? So I guess I'm not necessarily saying that I am not my thoughts, but my thoughts are merely of me, right? But I guess that makes me the ocean and not the fisherman, because the fish doesn't come from the fisherman. So anyway, I digress. Drink every time I say fish. If you haven't thought about thought all that much, which is so fair, I highly recommend that you try to observe the journey of your thought. Like, what does it feel like to you? Like, what does that space before your thought feel like? Where do you feel like it sits? Like, do you feel like that sea? Oh my God. Do you feel like your consciousness sits in, you know, your forehead? Does it sit in your chest? Does it sit outside of your body? Like, where do you feel like your consciousness sits? What shape does it take? I don't know. I just think that it's so beautiful how no one will ever be able to actually articulate into English or into language, sorry, what thought actually is, because that's not actually what language is for.